The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Triangle Gardener and the Washington Post. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. On today's Armchair Traveler, we first go south to South Carolina, and the headline says, Festival of Flowers Celebrates Floral Creativity. Now, Beverly Hurley's article appeared in the May-June 2025 issue of the Triangle Gardener. You'll find that in those freestands, like I found this one in a grocery store, as a matter of fact, but I've seen them at restaurants and other locations throughout the Raleigh-Durham area. Now, Ms. Hurley is the editor of the magazine, as well as the online GardenDestination.com overhead, and as her bio states, when she's not gardening, she loves to travel, and we're going to find out why as we read the article now. The Festival of Flowers in South Carolina is a celebration of nature's beauty. When the charming town of Greenwood transforms into an immersive experience in floral art. The main weekend is June 5th through 8th this year in 2025, prime time to gaze upon some 55 artfully designed topiaries on display across the uptown area of town. You can also enjoy special exhibits, garden tours, and symposium, a juried show of arts and crafts, live music, food and drink, this includes wine walk among the topiaries, and a full schedule of more activities. Now, the floral buzz continues until the town's barbecue and blues festival into mid-July, when the topiaries are returned to the greenhouse, where they'll rest until next year's celebration. So why don't you make plans for 2026 if you really enjoy seeing and hearing about this sort of adventure. Now we're going to talk about festival history. Now in its 58th year, the roots of the Flower Festival began when local company Park Seed would open its trial gardens and people came from near and far to see the stunning gardens on display. Park Seed was started in 1868 by then 15-year-old George W. Park, who sold seeds collected from his Pennsylvania garden. It became an overnight success. The company eventually moved to the better climate of Greenwood in 1924 and grew from there to become one of the largest mail-order seed and plant companies in the nation. With so many people visiting these trial gardens, local tourism officials decided to become involved. Activities were added, and it evolved into a festival of flowers. The festival bloomed and boomed for many years, but times eventually changed. Park Seed was sold, and the trial gardens declined. In 2008, the Greenwood Chamber of Commerce took the popular Festival of Flowers under its banner, and the growth returned, including the addition of amazing topiary sculptures. When you think topiaries, you probably think of the pruned and sculpted evergreens found across Disney properties. But the topiaries of the Flower Festival are made of annuals, perennials, and grasses inset into complex, custom-made steel structures shaped into popular figures. Each topiary has a name, like Bubbles, the seahorse, and Pete, the peacock. And come in all sizes, from the smaller dabbling ducks to the 14-foot-tall giraffe and the near full-size Jeep truck. Shapes include mushrooms, a gorilla, jellyfish, mermaid, and dolphin among the dozens on display. There is a Clemson University tiger, a University of South Carolina gamecock, a Lander University bearcat in the mix of topiaries, too. A team of full-time and part-time horticultural experts manages the city greenhouses and the topiaries used in the festival. The crew works to change up the floral on these every year, while the base plants like sedges and lichens and sedums and grasses remain. Creeping ficus, Ficus pumuli, is used in many of the topiaries, and the sphagnum moss fills the interiors to anchor the plants. Unique flora is added to bring out the personality of the topiary. The mermaid's lichen covered arms and donkey tail sedum morganarium and silver falls or Diachondra argentea in the donkey's tail are a few examples. And throughout the festival, the greenhouse crew keeps watch over the topiaries that need repair or plant material added. Now, each topiary has a built-in irrigation system to keep it looking fresh as the day it was planted. Now, a complete replanting of a topiary happens about every 5 years, and a new topiary can't be created unless an existing one is retired, and there is only so much space in the greenhouse to store these. The festival started with 14 in 2008, and some of these originals are still on display. The staff also maintains the propagation greenhouse, where they grow by seed and cuttings nearly 90% of what they use in the displays, along with maintaining the city's parks and pollinator-friendly garden areas. More about Greenwood. In addition to the festival flowers, Greenwood is notable for its historic buildings and its extra-wide main street. They say it's the widest main street in the world, where the former railroad tracks ran through the center of town. At one time, the town's economy was dependent on the local textile mill. While some textile processing remains in the area, the town has expanded beyond its mill town economy and railroad heritage and includes regional, national, and international businesses. Many of the historic buildings of its past have been restored to house museums, an arts center, performing arts theater, visitor center, restaurants, galleries, and shops. New amenities have been added, like the Uptown Market open in season on Saturday for fresh local produce. Adjacent to the market is an edible garden maintained by local master gardeners. This long, linear garden is filled with edible plants grown for the local food bank. Started in 2023, the master gardeners grow unusual plants that look good and are edible. Golden oregano, Chinese pink celery, African blue basil, and cardoon artichoke thistle are just a few of the uncommon edible plants found here. In summer, they add pots of ponderosa lemons that had been stored away in winter. Now, several archways are used for vining edibles. Succession planting keeps the garden growing well into the late fall with squash, pumpkins, and okra. The garden is also filled with ideas for home gardeners to follow. Not far from the hometown, the uptown area, is the Dr. Benjamin E. Mays Historic Preservation Site. Now, while you may not be familiar with Dr. Mays, he was a former president of the prestigious Morehouse College, and he was considered the intellectual father of the American Civil Rights Movement. He taught and mentored many of those whose names you do know associated with the movement. He gave the eulogy for Dr. Martin Luther King's funeral, and he was an advisor to three U.S. presidents. The site includes his former childhood home, moved here along with a small museum filled with memories of the movement's struggles and accomplishments. Greenwood has many places to experience nature with biking and hiking paths across the community. One place to visit for the flora and fauna is Lake Greenwood State Park. In springtime especially, the park is filled with wisteria, wild jessamine, tulip poplars, eastern redbuds and dogwoods, native viburnums, and wild honeysuckle. Many of the park structures overlooking the lake were built by the Civilian Conservation Corps during the 1930s Depression. The Visitor Center has an exhibit on this history that is especially informative, and you can check with the center to see which trails have been reopened after damage by Hurricane Helene last September. For gardeners who like to visit garden centers and plant nurseries when they travel, a stop at Wyatt Farms could fill a shopping list. Do note that Park Seed Company is not open to the public, even though a state highway sign points to its trial gardens that are no longer available to view. Greenwood is part of the old 96 District in South Carolina, a historic region stretching across the western part of the state. It's named for the 96-mile stretch along an old trading path that once connected Charleston to the frontier. This region is home to small towns with deep historical roots and offers a variety of attractions, from historic sites to beautiful lakes and nature preserves that deliver an authentic slice of South Carolina's past and present. Other towns to visit. One of the small towns not far from Greenwood is Abbeville, South Carolina. This historic town was settled by a group of French Huguenots in 1758 and was named for the same town in France. Its early legacy is embedded in the Civil War, as it's where the state's decision to secede from the U.S. took place. It's also where the decision to dissolve the Confederacy was made 5 years later in a home near the town square. Today, the charming central square is rimmed by original circa 1880s buildings, filled with shops and restaurants in the historic downtown. The Opera House offers sold-out shows, and is the state's official theater. The Belmont Inn features modern hotel amenities in the historical structure. The 125-foot-tall steeple of Trinity Episcopal Church is a landmark at the end of Trinity Street and dates to the 1860s. A hedge of heritage boxwoods surrounds the historic church. Just outside the town of Cedar Ridge Farm Apothecary, now this is set on 6 acres at the edge of town. The couple who bought the property in 2017 have transformed it into a tranquil oasis with gardens, chickens, and most importantly, its apothecary shop. Inside the small shed, bottles of elixirs, salves, and natural remedy products line those shelves. Now, shoppers come to find herbal solutions to everyday issues like allergies, stinging nettle, for example, asthma, there's mullein, then inflammation, castor oil, and a host of other ailments. Now, where to stay? Now, Regal Hall offers bed and breakfast lodging and amenities in this stately 1950s home set on 3 acres in the small community of Ware Shoals. The property offers charm and history wrapped up in a comfortable and memorable place to stay in the area. Now, a grand foyer greets you upon entering the house, decorated with elegant historic furnishings. All of the guest rooms feature an ensuite bath, luxury bedding, and are decorated for maximum comfort and unwinding. Enjoy the patio room downstairs with views out the windows to nature beyond. Now relax under the stars in the evening on the back patio. Where to dine? In Greenwood, there are dozens of local restaurants for dining. Brick on the Lake has an extensive menu for lunch and dinner with views of Lake Greenwood. The Mill House in Uptown features or offers brick oven pizzas, hot sandwiches, and craft beers. Montague's takes up a notch with the elegantly prepared dishes ranging from seafood to steak and chicken, plus a classic and specialty cocktail menu. One of the area's most flavor-filled restaurants is Indigenous Underground in Abbeville. On par with dining you would expect in a much larger city, the restaurant offers eclectic Southern cuisine developed by visionary chef Erica McKeer. Now, using mostly South Carolina products, one of the few restaurants in the area that does this, she transforms the basics of the soul food she grew up with into creative and memorable dishes. Spring rolls filled with seasoned collard greens and black-eyed peas called soul rolls, black-eyed pea gumbo, bacon pimento cheese hamburger, and the popular gator and grits with deep-fried alligator tail meat and a cream crawfish sauce. Just a few of the creative dishes that will leave you dreaming of more. More places to visit. Throughout the month of May and June, the Ag and Art Tour extends across 22 counties in South Carolina. This includes counties in the old 96 district. The Ag part includes farmers who open their doors to visitors to tour and experience everything from berries and fresh flower to growing to alpaca and cattle farms. Now, the Art part features galleries and artisans. Each weekend, the tour rolls through a new set of counties to explore. And if you'd like to check this one out and get a look at the schedule for more travel information, check out agandarttour.com. That's agandarttour.com. On your way back to Raleigh, stop in Musgrove Mill State Historic Site in Clinton, the site of a famous Revolutionary War battle. Beyond this history, there are wildflowers in bloom and Osage orange trees that gardeners come to see. A pollinator garden attracts monarch butterflies. Now, for more information on the old 96th District in South Carolina, you can visit told96sc.com. Visit old 96 is a number .com. So there you go. some interesting things going on in South Carolina for you to look at. Well, our next article comes from the March 28, 2025 issue of the Washington Post. Veteran travel writer Andrea Sachs' story is headlined, Cheeseburgers and Used Guitars, The Gospel of Hard Rock Cafe. Now, the subhead reveals some travelers collect passport stamps, some collect Hard Rock visits. Now, let's hear her story. And the dateline is London. Beneath the gift shop of the original Hard Rock Cafe, staff members lead daily tours of the vault, a space the size of a walk-in closet that guards some of the chain's most vaunted treasures. Inside, there's the harpsichord played by the Beatles, Bo Diddley's cigar box guitar, a bustier from Madonna's era of traffic cone tops, and at the restaurant across the street, diners eat cheeseburgers along with Jimi Hendrix's maracas, Keith Richards' pink Fender Stratocaster, and a pair of glittery sunglasses immortalized on the cover of Elton John's chart-topping album, Caribou. Over at Table 61, where Princess Diana once dined with her young princesses, a small plaque honors a duo with no musical gifts to speak of. To Dave and Val, legends among our patrons, the sign reads, this booth is dedicated to your enduring friendship. Now, Dave and Val Harvey, a married couple from Middlesex, England, have been Hard Rock regulars since the mid-1980s. First once a month, then every Saturday, now every other weekend. They always sit at the four-top table sandwiched between Roger Daltrey's Tommy outfit and Led Zeppelin drummer John Bonham's kit. Now, Dave, who has eaten thousands of meals here, has a standing order, cheeseburgers, fries, and vanilla ice cream. The Hard Rock Harveys, who held their wedding reception at the now-closed Hard Rock Cafe Maui, are members of an extraordinary fan club whose travel and dining plans revolve around the temple to music deities and nacho plates. With more than 150 cafes in over 70 countries, devotees of the brand can turn their hobby into a lifelong pursuit. Last year, for Dave's 70th birthday, the London staff presented the Harveys with an engraved plate. When we walked through the door of the London Cafe for the first time, I said, yeah, this is for me, said Dave, a retired bus mechanic who sports a Hard Rock Cafe tattoo on his arm. It's the whole thing, the music, the food, the people, the memorabilia, he says. More than a half century since its debut, the Rockin' Burger Joint stands as a testament to the enduring powers of rock idolatry. American roadside diners and logo tees. Name a cultural capital or a tourist haven. Osaka, Budapest, New Delhi, Lisbon, Bali, Cape Town, La Paz, and you'll find people happily chewing on burgers and mooning over used instruments in warm costumes, seemingly in defiance of the local cuisines, museums, and archaeological sites. Other theme establishments have fumbled or failed. Fashion cafe, completely shut down. The celebrity-packed Planet Hollywood downsized to only four restaurant locations, including the recently reopened Times Square site. Now, meanwhile, Hard Rock International has experienced its own ebb and flows, changing ownership four times, most recently to the Seminole Tribe of Florida. That was in 2007. Yet the iconic brand, recognizable by a logo with a retro font transposed on a yellow disc that evokes an abstract cheeseburger, is everywhere. New restaurants, hotels, casinos, souvenir shops, and live music venues are coursing through the pipeline, including cafes in Madrid and Ipanema, Brazil, and on Tejon Reservation land in California. Every day around the world, tourists pour out of the cafes and retail stores, brandishing the logo with sports team pride. The appetite for Hard Rock Cafe apparently is insatiable. The opening act. The first Hard Rock was established in 1971 by a couple of U.S. expats, Peter Morton, whose father co-founded the Morton Steakhouse chain, and Isaac Tigret, who would go on to marry Ringo Starr's ex-wife. The pair of young entrepreneurs shared a mutual hankering for ground beef patties and rock music. After importing the classic American-style diner, they waited for the British invasion to arrive, and it did. These two guys open a restaurant introducing the American hamburger to London, which then was still new, said Ken Kerrigan, a New York University instructor, who specializes in corporate branding. They had this novelty, but they also tapped into the ethos of rock and roll. Rebellion, freedom, iconoclasm with a side of fries. Like the music in its name, hard rock built mass appeal. According to James Russell Jones, the general manager in London who started his career with the company as a busboy, quality hamburgers were unusual on that side of the Atlantic. Hard Rock Cafe, he said, helped upend England's conservative cuisine and culture. The unpretentious food and communal spirit of rock music brought a wider group of diners to the table. Its motto, love all, serve all, summed up its egalitarian philosophy. We opened the first classless restaurant. It didn't matter who you were. You came through the same door, said Rita Gilligan, 84, one of the cafe's first hires, who retired only a couple of years ago. The billionaire, the bellman, the baker, the banker, they all sat together, she said. 5 decades later, step inside the Las Vegas location, and not a whole lot has changed. The third largest cafe after Orlando and New York City commands a prime location on the Vegas Strip, its 3 stories overlooking the street carnival below. Inside, LL Cool J raps, outside, an Elvis impersonator croons. One late morning, last March, a line started to form by the hostess station. Arkham and Kayla Hines stopped by on their way to bed. The married couple from Bronx were wearing the same clothes from the previous night, a lack of sleep creasing their faces. Every time I come to Vegas, I have to come here, said Arkham, a bus driver who has visited Nevada's city about 25 times. Kayla, who works for the New York City Parks Department, has lobbied for breakfast at Denny's. Once the bottomless mimosas started flowing, she switched allegiances. At a nearby table, 2 friends from the United Kingdom were chipping away at a mound of pancakes and an omelet as thick as a platform heel. We're all about the food, said Emma May Down, a sales manager who was unaware of the music connection. In every hard rock location, whether you're dining in Orlando, Suriname, or Kathmandu, the menu is consistent. In addition to the burgers, the nachos, baby back ribs, and milkshakes are menu stalwarts. When you're in a strange place, you know you're going to find other people who share that same interest, said Amanda Bellamino, an assistant professor of hospitality management at the University of Nevada at Las Vegas. Before he worked for the company, Hard Rock International chairman Jim Allen visited a cafe in South Africa during his honeymoon with his first wife, satisfying the couple's craving for good old-fashioned American food and a cold Budweiser beer. Allen said the chain offers more than familiarity, however. We're not McDonald's, he said. We're an experience. Branding and marketing experts agree that the Hard Rock Cafe can't exist on food alone. Kerrigan, the instructor who is also a lead singer in a hard rock cover band, cites online reviews that rank it slightly better than Applebee's. He pegs its longevity and popularity to what he calls entertainment. Hard Rock latched their brand onto what it means to rock, Kerrigan said. You're great, and you're rebellious, and you're different, and you're changing things. Founders Morton and Tigret, who embodied the rocker look with flowing locks, didn't set out to collect costumes and instruments. It was serendipity. Eric Clapton, a former regular of the London Cafe, donated a red Fender guitar that, once installed, would act as a reserve sign for his favorite bar stool. Shortly after, Pete Townsend sent the restaurant one of his guitars with a note that read, "Mine's as good as his. Love, Pete." Both still hang over the bar. Well, the dueling guitars spawned the world's largest private collection of music memorabilia. The more than 88,000 items span decades of music history and represent genres including heavy metal, pop, grunge, rap, R&B, blues, country, and Milli Vanilli. Collecting cafes, T-shirts, and 10,000 pins. Some travelers collect hard rock cafes as they would countries, U.S. states, or national parks. Andreas Berget, a bank advisor from Germany, is one of the most accomplished. In 2016, he embarked on a jaunt that would rival Taylor Swift's Eras Tour. 25 hard rocks in 9 Asian countries over 16 days. In November, he clinched his 400th cafe at the Grand Opening of the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Bristol, Virginia. In January, during a spin through Latin America, he increased his tally by 16. In September, he will add China and Mongolia to his life list. There are Starbucks collectors, but it's not the same, said Bergelt, 50, who was serenaded by a Madrid Hard Rock hotel manager and feted on his latest birthday by cafe employees at Chiang Mai Airport in Singapore. Bergelt, who, like many other pilgrims, doesn't just accrue visits, he has been amassing keepsakes such as uniforms, logos, carpets, and 2 decades' worth of manager's signatures since he bought his first T-shirt at the Berlin Cafe in 1993. In his home, he displays the relics in what he calls the Hard Rock Way Vault. One room is not enough, he said, of an exhibit space that encompasses an entryway, staircase, bathroom, mail room, and laundry room. Similar to music fans, cafe enthusiasts want to own a piece of their idols. The rock shop, which can be attached to the cafe or standalone, feeds with fervor with T-shirts, keychains, magnets, and pins, shiny objects that have produced a community as serious about collecting as numismatists. Now, the original pin was a gift from Tigrit to Gilligan, whose likeness has appeared on subsequent pieces. Today, servers wear lanyards laden with pins, which they often swap with customers and employees from other locations. I'll never take them off, said Rita Nevis Martens, who works in the Amsterdam Rock Shop. I wear them very proudly, especially the Rita pin. The trinkets range from common to rare. There are standard ones sold in every gift shop, as well as ones designed for a specific city as part of a series or for a special event or commemoration. Pins created for a cafe's grand opening, said avid collector Lou Nuccio, also are highly coveted. Now, Nuccio purchased his first pin at the Hard Rock Cafe in Manhattan, which opened in 1984, the same year he graduated from high school in New Jersey. Years later, when he took his kids to Orlando Disneyland and Honolulu, he'd squeeze in a visit to a Hard Rock Cafe, too. Now he owns nearly 10,000 pins. It was easy because Hard Rock Cafes were strategically placed all over these vacation-type cities, says Nuccio, director of operations at a technology company. So, when my kids were younger, we gravitated toward those places. In the past few years, Nuccio, who runs a pin trading Facebook page with more than 27,000 followers, has been reining in his hobby. He said he has become more selective, fully aware that if he's not careful, he could be one of those parents who leaves a whole bunch of boxes of metal for their kids to try to sell. In London, the Harveys also have thousands of pins in addition to scores of Hard Rock Cafe artifacts displayed in their home like a private museum. They have been slowly giving away items, but Dave lamented, "The trouble is we have so much stuff." The Hard Rock, to ensure a good home for the remainder of their collection postmortem, they included instructions in their will. Now, the mementos, including the table plaque, will go to the London Cafe and be distributed among the staff. The Hard Rock Cafe experience, unique due to its rich collection of music memorabilia, which creates a museum-like atmosphere that appeals to music enthusiasts. Now, many visitors cherish personal interactions with staff and memorable moments, such as holding iconic instruments. And there you go, the story of the Hard Rock Cafe. And my family got to enjoy one out in Denver many years ago. And after we ate, we sat there and enjoyed the ambiance of the moment. It was definitely full. It was lunchtime in Denver, and Denver's a unique place, as we've read in previous episodes of Armchair Traveler. But at this particular restaurant, we walked out after paying the bill, getting to talk to people who were visiting from other states who sat around us. A few minutes later, my cell phone rings, and the woman said, "I'm so-and-so from Hard Rock Cafe. I have your credit card." Thank you, Hard Rock Cafe, for your professionalism. I greatly appreciate it. And that, my friends, brings us to the end of today's Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next week. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and remind you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Now, if you have any questions or comments, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And again, the website, ncreadingservice.org. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.